Hi friends, you're listening to Vegan Trove Podcast, episode 71. My name's Trish Roberts. So I wanted to share with you an audio from a live stream interview, discussion or chat you might say, that Keith Berger from South Florida Vegan Education Group and myself did with Steve Grumbine from Real Progressives on Facebook. And Steve was kind enough to invite myself and Keith to discuss veganism and be very frank about it, and he was very good-hearted about it. He's not vegan himself, but he has certainly been considering that, and that's always good news. And there was a nice amount of people engaged in the comment section, and the page itself has over 100,000 people, and people tend to be usually quite interested in whatever live streams happen on that page. So he's hoping that that message spreads far, and there's been a lot of shares of that particular live stream, so that's always good news. Anyway, so I thought I'd share the audio with you, and feel free to pass that on, and feel free to subscribe to Real Progressives. You can find that page on Facebook. The username is at Real Progressive. That's singular on Facebook. So I invite you to join that page, particularly if you're a US citizen, because they cover a lot of issues, from anti-war issues to modern monetary theory to there's a whole gamut of issues they cover. And it is a progressive page, so I invite you to join that. Anyway, without further ado, enjoy.
Good evening, everybody. This is Steve with Real Progressives. Tonight, we're going to be departing from my normal economic discussions, and two friends of mine are going to take us on a journey tonight that I certainly didn't expect to be on. That's for sure. But full disclosure, I used to be thin, used to work out all the time, was in great shape. I felt really, really good about myself, and life got away from me. I put on some weight. I stopped eating healthy. I started developing some blood pressure problems. I started developing some other issues as well. Some friends watched and they said, Steve, we think we might be able to help you. So in the middle of all that, my friend Trish reached out to me and basically told me, Steve, I think I might be able to help you. And I said, well, great. Why don't you come on Real Progressives with me? And we can go ahead and talk about this wonderful help that you can give me. And she says, I would love to. And little by little by little, I've been trying desperately to get her on. And it's worked out that I have her and special guest Keith Berger. Welcome to Real Progressives, my friends.
Thank you, Steve.
Hi, Steve. Welcome to you.
Sorry. Let's start off. What I want to do is I want to have a moment for Keith to introduce himself. Keith, who are you, man? Tell me why you care about being vegan.
We only have an hour. I can't possibly do that. By the way, you're looking very slender. And have you been going to the gym?
No, not at all, man. Not at all.
Well, the reason I'm vegan, the reason I care about veganism is the reason I'm vegan is the same reason that I don't exploit, oppress, or abuse any other groups of individuals. I feel that if we feel that animals matter, then we don't enslave them, exploit them, and ultimately execute them for our pleasure. Much the same way that I don't indulge in racism or sexism or heterosexism, I don't indulge in speciesism, which is an arbitrary way to exclude animals from the moral community. So, if we believe that our cats and our dogs are worthy of living an autonomous life and not being harmed or killed, then it makes sense to extend that out to other species as well. That's the quick version.
Very good. All right. So, Trish, I'm going to ask you the same question. Why are you vegan and why do you care about being vegan?
Similar to Keith, really. I just realized, I'll just briefly give you a, just on the net one day in 2005, and I came across some information about dairy and dairy industry, and I was kind of shocked and thought, oh my goodness, I can't believe that this is actually allowable. You know, I thought really strange idea that cows were happy cows. You know, I didn't even really put the dairy together with what was going on for dairy cows. The male calves are being taken away from them and killed at only a couple of days old, and that's like they're byproducts of the dairy industry. And I only sort of didn't get the whole information about what was going on enough that I just could not believe that this was okay, that this was allowable, and this is what one would call welfare, you know, for animals. And so I immediately became vegan. I was so shocked. I just sort of thought, well, if this is what's going on for the dairy, you know, for cows and their sentient beings, acceptable, I'm sure this is happening in other industries. And so I just immediately thought, I just have to stop using animal products. And I didn't even know anything about veganism at all, really. I'd heard of the word, but I really didn't know any vegans. And so it's just been one of the best decisions I've made in my life, and I'm not exaggerating. It's absolutely transformed my entire life, and I'm just sort of thank the day that I became vegan, and it's been so easy, really. People think it's really, really difficult, but it's not. It's actually very easy. So, and just like Keith, even after I became vegan, I didn't fully see animals as sentient beings. It actually took time and over time, I really, really could see them as the sentient beings they are, and that its species is an irrelevant criterion as to whether they belong in the moral community. So I realized that they belong in the moral community just like us, even though they're another species, just like race and sex and sexual orientation, all individuals, no matter. Those are irrelevant criterions as to whether we belong in the moral community, all of us. So we're all on this planet together, and I don't want to oppress them. I don't want to exploit them anymore. And so that's the sort of the short.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. So, okay, obviously Steve Grumbine is not a vegan at this point in time. And you and I have had a lot of conversations, quite frankly, and you've always been very caring, and you know that I've got some conditions. And so as I putz through life and I just sort of bounce around eating whatever feels good and tastes good and so forth, and I'm not really thinking through this lens that you guys are demonstrating, obviously I have a bit of a dissonance there, because on one hand, everything you just said, it sounds completely legitimate, like that's where I want to be. But then over here, there's this ambivalence, and I'm not even sure if it's ambivalence. I'm not sure what the word is that I'm looking for, but I think that Keith, quite frankly, knows about this. We talked about this as we prepped for this interview. Mm-hmm. Keith, what are we talking about here? What is the three barriers, really, that man has in terms of embracing this?
The way I see it, and from my personal experience, and then you know, with myself, and then of course dealing with other people who I talk to about being vegan, the three almost universal human characteristics that I see that are stumbling blocks to any kind of new information, especially something that might be considered really against the status quo, are selfishness, which is what's in it for me. Laziness, which is how much effort do I have to put into this thing, and a sort of insatiable desire to be right at all costs. So, like Trish, I had come across some information. I had seen a video about non-human individuals who were rescued from you know, sort of horrific farming conditions. And I looked and I said, you know, that looks like slavery, and I don't do human slavery, so why would I do animal slavery? And in that moment, I had a choice to make, and the choice was, do Do I continue to be selfish and self-seeking, which I was, and just continue to eat and wear and otherwise use animals to serve my pleasure? Or do I make a more selfless choice and say, you know what? My money is victimizing others, so I need to stop doing that. And I made that non-selfish choice. The other part is the laziness. And I thought, well, this is going to be really difficult. I'm going to have to change everything about my life, which in a sense was true. But what I thought were difficulties were really minor inconveniences. And an illustration I'd given you previously, Steve, is, you know, if the difference is between dairy milk over here and almond milk that's 6 inches away from it, like it is in the store, I only have to move my arm another 6 inches to reach the almond milk. It's not a life-altering proposition. I simply have to move differently, or I have to walk past the butcher shop to the produce aisle. And the third part is the desire to be right at all costs, and I have that. But I couldn't argue with the information, and I couldn't argue with the logic, and I couldn't argue with the fact that I realized I was morally inconsistent when I was using animals. To talk to other people about it and say, listen, everything your mom and your dad told you was, you know, not correct, and everything that the media tells you and everything that you hear in every ad on TV and radio, you know, they're all gearing you toward using animals, because our society is literally built on the blood and bones of animals. There's animal parts in the roadways that we drive on. For me to tell somebody everything that you know is wrong, that's a daunting proposition. So most of the time I just ask them questions and allow them to come to their own conclusions. And that's an easier way. And I think you might find that with economic theory too.
Absolutely. I was going to say, it's, you know, I find that as I present something so ridiculously simple, like, hey, everybody, you say you want a Green New Deal. You say you want a New Deal. I'm telling you, here's financially, here's economically how that happens. And they go from being, yes, we need a Green Deal 1 minute, to the next minute going, well, you know, mama said that the Fed is private, mama said this and mama said that. And it's like all of a sudden they forgot that the primary purpose of this conversation was the Green New Deal. And so, you know, this whole dissonance in actually seeking to win and seeking to be consistent and seeking to actually go for that which is, you know, correct. It just seems to fall away. So with that in mind, Trish, tell me real quickly, you had made mention of, you know, what you saw me, and we talked about my possible condition, the concerns about having an ascending aortic aneurysm. You immediately took notice, and it really became something that you wanted to talk about. And that kind of drove some of our conversations a little bit. Can you talk a little bit about how veganism helps with not just the individual health, but overarching concerns like, you know, heart conditions and the like. Can you touch on that?
You know, first and foremost, it's about non-human animals and their sentience. Factors that there's important effects of it being vegan. There are ancillary benefits of being vegan, is one of them. And I realized, actually, I had no idea really that how much animal products really just don't belong in our bodies. If they're aware of nutritionfacts.org, that's actually an amazing, it's veganism is an ethical position, but it's a health-based, science-based, about a plant-based diet, and also studies about human studies on the effects of animal products on our bodies. And I just realized that it's just, they just don't belong in our bodies. And then there's effects are just absolutely tremendous, the disaster that is animal agriculture. And we can quibble about the percentage, but it's, there's an acre of Amazon rainforest cleared every minute through animal agriculture, and also and that's also for soy production, which is fed to animals in animal agriculture. So it's a tremendously, that's just one of the many, many things about animal agriculture that are devastating to the planet. So it also affects refugees. If we're not vegan, we're affecting the climate refugees. And there's going to be so many more as time. Bangladesh is going underwater as we speak. And there's 160 million people there. So there's that aspect. There's also the famine aspect. There's many poor countries growing grain for animals in these large animal feedlots, and it takes 7 pounds of grain to make 1 pound of beef. I hate talking about animals this way in sort of beef terms and stuff, because they're moral, you know, they're moral persons like I am. But there's 1 pound of, you know, beef is 7 pounds of grain. It's like we're actually driving famine in the world, and we're driving climate change, because it's one of the largest contributors to climate change. So there's so many factors. But like you were saying about your health, Steve, something in me, when I hear people, when they've got these health concerns, because most of the diseases and illnesses we have today are from mostly animal products and being sedentary, and also there's some environmental toxins as well. But animal products are a driver of disease and a tremendous extent. And there's like 5,000, I don't know if it's 5,000 a day or 5,000 a week, Americans, you know, die, of products. And when I hear people say they have a certain illness like diabetes or something like you have with that ascending, dissecting aneurysm, I just think, God, I'd really like to be, first of all, I wish they were vegan, because there's 1 trillion land and aquatic animals that are killed, you know, tortured and killed every year for trivial reasons of palate pleasure, and we don't need animal products to survive. But I sort of think to myself when I hear, you know, for example, you, I think that's actually from trans fats. You know, it collects on the interior of the aorta, causes a weakening in that aorta, and then unfortunately it can be really disastrous, as you know. You can just have it dead. That's how the severity of that particular condition. And even though and I know that if you go vegan for ethical reasons, which is what veganism is, but if you adopted a plant-based diet, you would find that you could actually reverse a lot of what's happening in your arteries, and you could actually, you mightn't be able to fix the weakening in that particular artery, and that might require a medical intervention, like you mentioned in public, a stent. But you could actually reverse anything else that happens. And so I sort of think, God, if only I could get you to go, to firstly go vegan for the right reasons, the ethical reasons, and then that would, of course, keep. You wouldn't, if it became inconvenient at any time, you wouldn't just, drop off and, go and eat little bits of this and that, animal products. You know, you'd realize that they're actually sentient beings. But I sort of know that it would really, really benefit you and so many people. In fact, before I became vegan, I think I was heading towards, I didn't realize it, but I had incipient diabetes just before I became vegan, and I actually reversed that. It was just going into diabetes, and I actually reversed that. And you'll hear many stories of people who reverse diabetes type 2, because they adopted a plant-based diet. Of course, like I say, veganism is more than just rejecting animal products for food and clothing. It's for clothing and all of that. But anyway, that's really what I'm saying, is that I just realize how much it could change. And I mean, you have a very large family, and your partner loves you, and it would just be so tremendous for you. And that's why I've been kind of like not focusing just on the health thing for but I've been I've been sort of hoping that will happen. But that's Keith was saying, it's a heavy indoctrination. We've been, right from the word go, we've been right from when we can even know what's going on, people are telling us, on one hand, look at the sweet little animals in the books, aren't they sweet? Little farm animals, it's all happy. And then on the other hand, we're saying, here, eat these, animals that are on your plates. And of course, children often reject that. They get quite freaked out when they realize what who was on their plates. So, you know, but it's an indoctrination right from the word go, and that's why people are so resistant, because it's like breathing to us, you know, consuming animals and wearing them, and you know what I mean? It's like breathing.
Absolutely. I've got to tell you, this is blowing my mind, because I've touched, I've dabbled, I've listened. I am looking over there watching Mr. Berger, and I'm going to ask him point blank. Keith, you heard what Trish said. Talk to me about your feelings, because you have voiced many of those same things as well. Talk to me about, I mean, obviously I'm coming into this and I'm saying, hey, I don't know if I can, and you're saying, yeah, you can. And Trish said, yeah, Steve. And I'm saying, well, maybe it's good for my health. And Trish says, let me push you a little bit further and tell you, hey, there's sentient beings on top of it all. So it's like, I'm trying to do it for my reasons. You're telling me there's a bigger reason. Talk about the sentient being aspect of it, and how this particular part of it really drove you towards veganism.
It did, and I'll. Did you catch the irony of my last name yet? Did you realize that?
I actually said I'm not gonna edit it. So you change your last name.
Yeah, and on top of that, I live in Boca Raton, Florida, so I am literally a vegan Boca burger. I'm the living embodiment. So this is the grand irony of my life. And I will. I'll get to more of what you're asking, but real quickly, because I can see some of the comments coming across the screen, and I've seen the word psoriasis show up a couple of times. And I'll tell you from personal experience, before I was vegan, I had psoriasis on my elbows so badly that I had my arm out the window of the car once, and a homeless guy who I thought was going to panhandle me came up to me and said, dude, what's wrong with your arm?
Oh, my God.
And I said, it's psoriasis. It's an autoimmune issue. Why? And he said, and he showed me something on his arm that required a trip to the clinic. So I sent him on his way. But within 30 days of not having any animal flesh or secretions, no meat, no eggs, no dairy, no fish, no chicken, no honey, no animal products, my psoriasis 100% cleared up and is gone. And I haven't had a lick of it in the last 13 years. So that's not a coincidence. You know, there are health benefits to this. But, you know, I was thinking about it from an economic point of view, because, you know, when we spoke previously and you said, you know, putting ethics aside, which is something we would never do in a human rights issue, right? And it's okay, because I've done it too. But I've heard it a lot, and I've written an essay about it, to maybe talk about that later. But we would never put ethics aside if we're talking about, for example, slavery. Like, you could have said, well, you know, anyone could say, we shouldn't enslave, it's risky to talk about this, but, you know, our reason for not enslaving people of color, here's the ancillary benefit. Once that stops, there's going to be a whole lot of jobs available for white people. There's an economic boom to it. Nobody says that. We talk about it's wrong to oppress a group of people. Nobody says that we should cut down spousal abuse because you're having too many trips to the ER and it's going to raise your insurance premiums. You know, there's an economic advantage to it, but it's ancillary at best. So, you know, that's why we focus so heavily on the ethical part, because you might clear up, you may adopt a plant-based diet, and everything goes great, and you lose weight and feel good, and all your blood levels check out. And then you want to have a cheat day, you know, because you're giving yourself a gift. So I'm just going to go have a hamburger now, and you forget, or you don't realize that that's not something you're eating. That's someone you're eating. That's somewhere down the line, my dollars were paying some person to kill someone for me, like I'm a little Roman emperor going, kill that one, daddy. I want to eat that one. They don't have that accent. That's the best I can imagine. So, you know, when I stopped looking at animals as abstract things and objects and stopped looking at them as herds of cows and gaggles of geese and herds of sheep and started to look at individuals and say, you know, the steak on my plate was an individual being. And because of my money, because of supply, my demand for the supply is there and someone had to be killed for me. And I'm not comfortable with that. I wouldn't do it to a human. It's really a fundamental matter of justice versus injustice. I don't have to love animals to live vegan. I don't even have to really care about animals. What I have to care about is not being part of an oppressive situation. You know, I don't love my next door neighbors. I hope they don't see this. Not those ones, the other ones. I don't necessarily love them, but I'm also not going to go into their house, tie them up, and take their food because it's something that I want. It's just not right to do. And I'm not going to do it because there's an ancillary, I'm not going to avoid doing it because the ancillary benefit is I don't go to jail or I feel, you know, good about myself. I'm not going to do it because it's just not right. And when we're kids, we know the difference between fair and unfair and just and unjust. Someone comes and takes your Legos and runs away. You go, that's not fair, because you know. But then we're taught that to blur these fair and unfair lines. So I would no sooner go and steal stuff from my neighbor's house than I would allow someone else to do that. If I saw someone breaking in, I would report that, or I would go and try to help them. So this is the reason, really at the bottom of it all. It's the idea that just because someone is different in some way, including different species, it doesn't mean that I have the right to take their right to have an autonomous life free of interference away. When I first went vegan, or actually vegetarian for a brief time, I quote unquote reserved my right to eat fish and eggs if I needed to. That's what I said. I don't know what I thought I needed it for. But then I realized at some point that if I'm reserving a right that infringes on someone else's rights and takes those rights away, it's not a right, but a wrong and a moral wrong for me. So there are incredible ancillary benefits to living vegan. The environment feels a positive benefit. Humans feel a positive benefit. And animals don't have to die unnecessarily. So really it's a win-win-win-win-win-win-win. There's a lot of wins. And the idea of could you do it? I did it. I was at McDonald's once. I ordered two Big Macs, a 6-piece McNugget, and a large chocolate shake. My friend was behind me in line. By the time he got to the table, I had finished one of the Big Macs. I ate every one you could catch and kill and cook every day. Vegetables were a side, thought. Fruit was a side thought. But when I realized that what I was doing was reaping the benefits of somebody else's misery and death, I had to stop. That was it. So could you do it? Absolutely. Do you want to do it? Maybe not at the moment, but you might, this is food for thought. No pun intended. Something to ruminate about.
Let me just say this. As somebody who loves a steak, and I think about it not as a sentient being right now, I'm still thinking of it as a food thing. And as I listen to you guys, it makes it obviously very clear that there is more to eating than just the satisfaction of something tasty. Now, I have gone to, in Philadelphia, I went to a vegan cheesesteak store. And
were you kidnapped and taken there in the trunk of a car?
Ironically, I went with a bunch of progressives at the People's Convention right before the DNC last summer. And when we went in there, I'm just sitting there going, oh my God, what is this going to taste like? This is going to be the worst thing I've ever had in my life. They kept swearing, honest to God, Steve, this cheesesteak might be better than the real one. I'm telling you right now, you might think this is the best cheesesteak you've ever had. I didn't buy it. I bought the cheesesteak, but I didn't buy that it would be the best one I ever had. But let me just say honestly that by midway through this cheesesteak, I had forgot that it was vegan. I had completely forgot that it was something other than what I liked. And I was devouring it, and I was kind of looking around on the table to see if somebody had extras because I kind of liked it. So, this is not coming at it quite from the ethical, moral side here, because obviously I was just a passenger through someone else's journey at that moment. But it was one of those, dropping of, the breadcrumb trail to a new way of life, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to have this show, is because I know for myself, and again, this is not going the ethical route yet, give me time, but in terms of...
10 minutes.
Yeah, I really want to change how I live, and I want my kids to have better values than what I had. And I think that, my values are so good on so many issues, and then I hear you guys talk and I feel like a heel. And I'm sure part of it is to do that, but there is a part of you haven't said anything negative. You've just simply laid out a series of truisms that stretch the paradigm by which we all live in. But you used very elegant, very eloquent, analogies, if you will, that allowed me to kind of see the point of what you're saying. So I want you to know that you're breaking through this carnivore's mindset, and I already have a progressive mind that doesn't want oppression and doesn't want these things. So what you're saying to me is touching me on other levels. You know what I mean? I'm hearing you, and maybe for the first time. So Trish, let's get your take.
Can I mention a quick interesting thing?
Yes, go ahead, Keith.
Okay. One second. I'm sorry, Trish. I'll be brief. Okay. But an interesting thing that occurred to me at one point is, you know, we have all these systemic diseases in our society. We have obesity and high cholesterol, and we have depression, anxiety, and there's so many things plaguing people. Now, if you were to lock me away and confine me and ultimately kill me, I'm going to be depressed and anxious during that period of confinement, no matter how nicely you treat me. I'm not going to want to be there. And once you kill me, all of that depression, anxiety, stress, fear, and everything that I'm feeling is going to be trapped in my meat, in my muscle, right? And then you eat that. You're then incorporating that into your body. And if it's true that we are what we eat, then you just ate my pain, my suffering, my misery, my stress, my anxiety, my depression. So is it any wonder that when we feast on the product of violence, that we not only create a violent society, but we create a society that's overrun with all of these problems? You're eating my cholesterol from my body. There's no cholesterol in a plant-based diet. You know, our body makes our own cholesterol usually within normal limits. Obviously, there are conditions that change that, but you're taking in all of this negative energy. There's really, on a molecular level, as I understand it, there's no way to process that in a healthy way. And some people will say, well, my grandmother ate 17 hot dogs a day till she was 96, and she died in perfect health, ironically. You know, and some people smoke for 75 years and they die in what seems to be perfect health. But those are anomalies. You know, the jury's in on the cigarette thing. And really, the studies show that the jury's in on the eating animal products piece. So just, you know, more stuff to think about.
No, and very, very good.
Different start for stepping on you, Trish.
I'm a late starter. That's all right, Keith. I'm a late starter, Steve. Like, I didn't become vegan until I was 45. You know, I'm 57 this year. I mean, it took me a while to kind of, you know, sort of, it took me a while to, and I came across that information. It was like somebody threw about the dairy industry. It was like somebody threw a bucket of ice water over me. It was like it snapped me out of my speciesist haze. I often refer to it as a speciesist haze where I knew there was something wrong with what I was doing all through my life, but because everybody was doing it, I sort of went along with it, you know, and then just sort of, yes, that's right. Animals are here for us to use, you know, they're not like us, you know, and that's something that we have with other races. You know, we think that we can do this to other races, and we can bomb Muslims in other countries because they've been vilified and they've been objectified by the corporate media. And therefore, a lot of the public don't seem to notice that we dropped 3 bombs every hour of every day for 8 years when Obama was in office. You know, this is the otherization of sentient beings, no matter if they're human or non-human. So what we're doing to non-human animals, we're also doing to human animals. You know, it's sort of like it's all related. And if we persecute the vulnerable and exploit the vulnerable, that is not going to stay with non-human animals. It is going to transfer to other groups, and it has, you know, where we're doing all sorts of things that we've done to non-human animals, we're now doing to human animals. So, you know, it's sort of like, and you know, just like with modern monetary theory, how important that is for you, Steve. You know that could change everything for a lot of people, and you can feel that right in your every cell, can't you? That, you know, you could change a lot.
Let me interrupt you momentarily, because I want to take what you just said before you lose it. I've been chomping at the bit inside, and I couldn't resist anymore. You're exactly right. And as I sit there, I break out a can of, like, crush you and pound people, because I'm like, guys, you're a murderer by proxy if you're not realizing that the when you talk about cutting spending, you're literally killing people that are poor. You're literally annihilating them. You're literally putting them out. I mean, there's so many things that come with that. And I'm impressed by something with both you and Keith right here, in that you guys, now it is slightly different in that there's the ethical component, which quite frankly is a moral choice, which we all share. But there is truth that goes below the next layer down, which is simple. You're taking a life, you're doing this, that, and the other. And there's some facts and truths there. And that, to me, is the common thread, is that you're dealing in truth. You're trying to say, listen, and people are like, yeah, whatever. And I think it's very important that we do see that tie-in. I let's just say I'm having a moment. I'm listening.
Having a moment?
Discrimination. I'm sorry, Keith.
It's okay,
they're
go
all
ahead.
Related. They're all related. All discriminations are related. You know, sexism, racism, speciesism, heterosexism. It's all related. And so to justice isn't exclusive, you know, and these sentient beings, there's 99.99% of the population on the planet are non-human animals. And we're enslaving and exploiting and torturing and murdering them, you know, by the literally 170 million every day. I mean, it's mind-boggling, the violence. So if we truly believe in nonviolence and justice, then we have to sort of, in many ways, to be morally consistent, we have to embrace veganism, the ethical position, because, I mean, it's just makes sense. You know what I mean? So and so once we realize that we're participating in so much violence, you know, then you know, we have to try and, you know, be morally consistent in ourselves. And I think that's why I used to say I loved animals when I was younger, and I would, if anything that, you know, somebody was doing something cruel to an animal, I'd freak out. You know, if I'd hear, you know, when I say freak out, I'd try and do something to help them. And yet every 3 times a day, I was sitting down to, you know, animals on my plate, and they were exactly the same sentient beings. You know, they had the same loves of life. They had likes and dislikes. They related to their young. They, you know, they love life, and they didn't want to die. And here I am, completely compartmentalizing. You know, the dog, the cat that I was, whom I was living with, and the animals on my plate. You know, and so yeah, it's, I'm probably getting off the track there, but
you're fine. In fact, I want to ask you guys both something, and you can take this in turns, or you can just go ahead and, you know, share. What I want to do is I want to hear your first steps for somebody that is considering veganism, for somebody who's, and I don't care the why. Maybe they're doing it because it's trendy. Maybe they're doing it because their sister does it. Maybe they're doing it because they're watching this live stream. Maybe they want to do it because they are fat and they don't want to be fat anymore. I don't care. It doesn't. Maybe they feel some kinship to animals and they don't know how to break free of eating them. I don't know. Whatever the issue that is bringing them to even consider this, walk a prospective potential vegan into beginning their journey.
I'd suggest this book first. Can I just interrupt you for a second?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm
Mind If I Order the Cheeseburger and Other Questions People Ask Vegans. That's actually a really, really great book, I think. What do you think, Keith? That's not a bad book. I think it's a frequently asked questions, really. That really helps with the ethical, because the ethical position is what's going to keep people vegan. If people become vegan for health reasons or environmental reasons, if anything becomes a little inconvenient, they're just going to go, oh, I don't need to do that now. You know, so that's probably the best thing, is to get a really good grounding in ethics. And then everything becomes so easy after that. I mean, when I see, you know, when I go into a supermarket and I see a lot of milk cartons, you know, on the shelves, what I see there is a distressed calf crying for their mother, and a mother being separated from her male calf, and they're crying, and she bellows for days on end, and because she's so distressed, she's lost her calf, and the little calf is being dragged across the slaughterhouse floor, still sucking on the finger of the slaughterhouse worker, before that little calf gets murdered. That's what I see when I see milk cartons. It's sort of like, it's there are individuals behind those things. So, I mean, if we get a good grounding in ethics, we're going to, and of course, leather, wool, fur, there's death and destruction behind all of it. It's not just, you know, it's not just flesh and dairy and eggs. It's leather, wool, fur, silk, and all of it is all products of violence. And so if we can find out about that, and you don't have to watch gory videos or anything like that. Just read a book like This Mind If I Order the Cheeseburger and Other Questions People Ask Vegans by Sherry F. Cobb. That's a really, really, that'll help you. And just sort of read about, I'll share some links in the comment section from, you know, a great site, uvearchives.wordpress.com. And that's got fantastic information, hasn't it, Keith? The uvearchives.wordpress.com. So that's a great site. And once you get that, it wouldn't matter. I mean, I honestly can't imagine ever wanting to participate in that sort of injustice and in violence again. It's just, you know, it wouldn't matter if I was in a room and there wasn't a vegan thing in the room and everybody's chomping away on stuff and I was really hungry. It wouldn't make me want to ever go there. You know what I mean? So that's the important. What do you reckon, Keith? What do you think?
Yeah.
Feed is frozen. Yeah. So anyway, we can still see you, Keith.
Yeah, you can talk, Keith.
Can you hear me?
I hear you fine. Go ahead.
We can hear you, Keith.
You can't hear me. Or you can't hear me.
No, we can. We can hear you. Can you hear us? Oh, I think you might be dropping out. You might have to
put it down there for a second, and I'll just there. And
yeah. So that's probably the best thing we can do is just get a good groundings in well, look at what's happening in the dairy industry, in the egg industry. I mean, they throw little male chicks into grinders alive. That's a normal thing in the dairy industry, in the egg industry. And I mean, it doesn't matter also, you know, we haven't talked about the idea of humane farming, which is just a myth. I mean, humane murder, compassionate killing, that's just, they're oxymorons. It doesn't really, and if you look actually into the humane, the so-called humane free range and all that sort of thing, there's a lot of violence in that as well. And in the end, when those animals are not productive anymore, they end up in the same slaughterhouse or in a bin full of other animals to die, or thrown, as in the egg industry, little male chicks are thrown alive into grinders at 1 and 2 days old. That's how they get rid of the male chicks. There's the whole idea of welfare and welfare reform is just, it is intended to help sell very expensive animal products. It's really got nothing to do with non-human animals and welfare. It's really about making industry economically efficient. So when people sort of hear about, you know, free-range egg, you know, we should buy that, or organic milk, we should buy that. Really, behind that is still a lot of violence, and that's why I'll leave you with some links that you might like to share with the viewers here. It's a myth. The humane, you know, and unfortunately, large animal organizations like to promote the so-called happy animal slavery. We call it, a lot of vegans call it happy animal slavery, because they have single issue campaigns and they ask for donations. And instead of asking people to go vegan, and that being the bottom line, the moral baseline, they often have single issue campaigns which fetishize certain types of animals, you know, certain species, and they also demonize certain types of animal use. And rather than it all being problematic and all being morally unjustifiable, particularly since we don't need animal products to survive at all, we don't need them in our lives, and we don't need to exploit animals, period. So, you know, the whole humane myth is something that's even promoted by so-called large animal rights organizations. Stand is just really to anything, any welfare improvements that they bring into any of these farms and all the, you know, the free range and all of that. Free range is just a huge big warehouse with animals crammed in there. They might be able to move around, but they're crammed in there. There's dead bodies laying around. There's in the broiler chickens that are used, you know, for meat, are they get so big in such a short period of time, they're genetically sort of raised that way, is they get so large that their legs break and they have heart attacks, and they get, that's how fast they're growing. I mean, it's absolutely, if only we understood the torture that we're putting these animals through for completely trivial reasons of mostly palate pleasure, and if we really thought about it, we would we would want to reject that. That's the thing, and we have to start sort of seeing, you know, we have to start thinking about they're not things and they're not property. They actually have, they're actually just like the dog and cat whom we live with and we think is great. You know, they're like family members. They're just like that, except we don't have a personal relationship with those animals in the fields. But if we did, we would see that they have the sentience just like the dog. Even if they're not like us, like, for example, aquatic animals, they're not like us in that they don't show emotion, but so what? They don't have to be like us for us to view them as, you know, they are sentient beings, and for us, you know, for them to be not, so, you know, it's this whole thing. Otherization has always been a problem with our species. We always otherize groups. If they're not like us, we want to homogenize them or destroy them. And this is why veganism is only encompasses non-human animals, because, you know, until we stop otherizing and then trying to kill or objectify, we're all never going to have peace on the planet. Never going to have peace while we do that. So that's why, you know, it's not just, it's not a diet, it's not purist, it's not extreme. It's actually what probably we should have been all along, and we've just lost our way, and we think that we're the crown of creation. We've got this human supremacist sort of a view of ourselves, that we're fabulous because we can do a few technological things we can't do. And does that make them more important than us? No. And does it make us more important than them because we have some not really, you know. They don't have to be like us to not exploit them and not want to kill them. So
this is, for me, let me just say, for me, this is really powerful, because I've avoided these subjects because I'm not good at them. I don't know them. I try to stay, you know, we built Real Progressives to be an amalgam of the entire progressive community, to be the true north of what it means to be a progressive. And largely, in trying to build out that knowledge area of, all the various knowledge areas that Real Progressives is supposed to do, health and nutrition is one of the big ones. And as we talked a little bit offline, you know, we really want to talk about, you know, things like suicide and prevention. And we want to talk about, tough subjects like addiction and so on and so forth. And veganism, you know, if you're not hearing the ethical component to this, which to me, quite frankly, I've heard, but I never heard it through the same lens or through the same filter, if you will, as I've heard it from you and Keith. I wish Keith didn't have the technical issues tonight, but regardless, got enough information, and I can't wait to have you guys back, because for me,
that'd be great.
Well, I really think that this is an important part of what we're doing. I want to include more and more voices, because progressivism, while I believe the underlying truths that stem from understanding economics allow us to do a tremendous amount of other things, I think that these kinds of issues allow people to be more, in sync, to eliminate the dissonance from their values they project outward to the values they live inward. And I think you guys made a compelling case for that tonight. I have a lot to consider here, because cognitively I'm like, yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. I agree with you. And I'm saying, I agree with you. I don't know. I'm just knowing that.
It takes decades though, doesn't it? I mean, it takes a lot of undoing of the indoctrination, doesn't it though? You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Because it's like breathing. It's been like breathing into us. How much for... And, you know, it's for allowing us to speak about this, because it's like it's It's not something that people, you know, it's an inconvenient thing, you know what I mean, for people. And, you know, it's really great that you've invited us to speak. It's really wonderful. And I'd love to come back. We'd love to come back and chat some more. And even if you want us to address some of the questions, I've noticed some people have been saying some things in the comment section. So
we could do this often because, you know, you can even afterwards, because you frequent our live streams, you can even feel free to jump in there and answer the questions directly and give them links and stuff like that. Because quite frankly, I think that, oh my goodness, I think we have a Keith Berger sighting.
Oh good.
I think we have a Keith Berger sighting. Here he comes. Here he comes. And welcome back.
Hey, what did I miss, Trish?
Welcome back, Keith.
Well, Trish is no longer vegan. She's no longer vegan.
Steve, what have
she's got a crocodile jacket.
No. I've just been yammering on, haven't I, Steve?
My internet, can I use the phrase shit the bed? And shit the bed.
Yes.
So I'm going to jump in really quick because it's so funny. I was in the netherworld of no interwebs. One of the people who commented has the amazing name of Curtis Mayfield. I wish it were the Curtis Mayfield. But I remember I saw something in the comments and he said that in vitro meat takes care of the whole problem. And I just wanted to address that super fast. I'm the co-founder of an organization called South Florida Vegan Education Group. Our website is vegan-education-group.com, and there's a blog that goes with that. And anyway, I wrote a blog post a while ago about how the idea of cultured meat, in vitro meat, or clean meat, lab meat, whatever it's being called, doesn't really solve the problem that we're looking to solve, which is the problem of speciesism. Because if we continue to serve people animal products that do actually still come from animals, right now they're using the fetal calf serum to create this stuff. That's blood that has to be taken from the still beating heart of a cow fetus in a mother that's going to be killed for meat. So, you know, right away there's some exploitation and you know, horrible, ugly stuff there. But what happens is we're continuing to propagate the idea that animal products need to be eaten by humans and that it's okay. So, you know, giving someone, you know, continuing to give something that looks like animal products to people who eat animal products, once they run out of the in vitro meat, sorry, sir, we're out of that. Well, just get me a regular steak. You know, people are going to continue doing the same thing. So, you wouldn't give someone who's a spousal abuser a dummy of their spouse to beat up, to take the place of the spouse they're beating up. You wouldn't give them a simulated model that they could take their aggressions out on, because you're not solving the problem. You're just giving them a replacement. And when that replacement isn't functioning anymore, they don't get the same satisfaction, they're going to jump right back on it. So I just wanted to bring that up apropos of nothing. But and the other thing, so I can monopolize two more minutes of time.
Sure.
Trish may not have mentioned it. She's an extremely humble person. I've known her for a couple of years now, and I find her to be amazing on a lot of levels: eloquence, intelligence, commitment. She has a number of websites, but one of them is howtogovegan.org, and it is chock full of information, not only about the ethical ideas behind veganism, but the practical ideas, the nutrition ideas. There's a lot to be gained there, and it's one of the best websites and one of the few websites that I recommend to people. So if you're looking for, going back to that idea of what do I do if I'm a new vegan, go to howtogovegan.org and look there. Her other site is Vegan Trove, like treasuretrove.com. And there's a Becoming Vegan area there that's incredible. there's stuff on my website that links to her pages. But I think by and large, the first and foremost thing is a commitment. It's just when I went vegan, when I started living vegan, I just said to myself, certain things are not an option anymore. Just as if I had grown up in the KKK and one day realized that, hey, what we're doing isn't right. It's just not an option to go to the Klan rally. It's not an option to burn a cross. It's not an option to wear the sheet. So for me, it's not an option to go order a hamburger. It's not an option to drink a glass of milk. It's not an option to engage in what I consider to be unacceptable moral behavior. So what does that leave us with? You know, because all we eat as humans is meat, right? It leaves us with 40,000 or so edible vegetables and fruits on the planet. We have such a wide variety of what we can consume. end, it's not all about food. You know, the night that I started living vegan, the next morning, the first thing I did is I went out shopping for non-leather shoes, non-leather belts. It took me so long to find a non-leather black belt, Steve, that I thought I was going to have to study jiu-jitsu for 3 years to get one. But the reality of it is there are every comfort, every convenience, and every pleasure that we want to satisfy, we can do without harming animals. It's as hard as this. It's as hard as going, Google. That's it, and it's all there. We live in a society where ignorance is no longer an excuse, and willful ignorance is totally unacceptable. And that's the idea that, you know, I don't want to know. Well, okay, but you can't unknow what you know. So anyway, that's me pontificating. I jump off the soapbox now. And
no, you're here for pontification, but you're also here to take the ignorati, you know, and the fool over here that, quite frankly, doesn't, you know, no. It's going to stumble and bumble and do whatever that I do in my process. And
we're here for you. She don't want you to die.
I'm so thankful that I have friends like you guys. So, I mean, I am blessed in so many ways that I get to talk to so many people exposing me to things that otherwise in my little small Southern Maryland home where I grew up was never talked about. And me and Keith and I joked offline before this, where I had mentioned, you know, how, you know, I think it's up to Trish too, where it's like, you know, my mom said, well, you know, everything in moderation. And, you know, there is, you know, it's kind of this, if you look at the ethical component to this, it's kind of like, you know, well, you know, only every third day will I kill something. I think I'm going to cut back and limit my murders down to this, you know, and, I don't know. I just, it really is an eye opener to start looking at life through a different lens. And I want to thank you.
Yeah.
So, all right. We've got like 6 minutes left here. I want to give Trish an opportunity to talk. And since Keith was gone, I'm going to let him close us out. Trish, go ahead and give us your sales pitch, your closing pitch.
Well, I could probably say to anybody is that, it's really been absolutely transformative for me to become vegan. I had no idea how much it was going to affect my life. And if I had died and not become vegan before that, I would consider that a tragedy. That's how important it was for me. I mean, and is for me. And it's hard to, you know, really understand and appreciate that until you actually become vegan in a way. It's like, it doesn't all happen at once. It's sort of like you become more sensitive to the world and to other sentient beings and even, you know, to little insects. You become a sort of it's a more sort of a fuller kind of a life. And also just the, you know, I mean, it's just made my life just, I just find that it's just transformed everything. And so all I can say to people is you know, if you live with a dog or a cat and you love them and they're like a family member, just think that there's really no difference between that dog and cat that you live with and whom you love and the animals that we're sitting down to eat three times a day and the ones that we wear on our backs and the ones that basically we're using for other reasons. There's really no difference. And so if we think about that, and if we read up on things like read that book I mentioned or there's some other links that I could share with Steve, with you, Steve, you know, read about that and just think about it. They're sentient animals and we don't have the right to use them as things. We have to reject that property status and that affects everything. It affects environment, it affects our health, it affects other humans because it's all related. That's really probably all I can say at the moment.
Okay.
And thanks so much for having us, Steve.
Oh, my God. Thank you for joining. I'm going to let Keith close us out. Sir, go for it.
What can I say that hasn't been said, really? First of all, thank you for having both Trish and myself on. Please check out her website, everybody. It's an amazing resource. You know, the reality is that if we believe in justice for all, then there's no asterisk there that says except for non-humans. When you know every world religion or spiritual philosophy has some version of thou shalt not kill, And there's no asterisk that says, except when I'm hungry or I want a leather jacket or I want a goose down comforter. If we believe that it's wrong to hurt and kill vulnerable individuals, then we extend that across species barriers. We extend that across all barriers, and we just stop doing it. It's certainly was never hard for me. There were minor inconveniences. You know, walking down one aisle in the supermarket became walking down a different aisle in the supermarket. It's really not a hardship. You know, yes, there are some places in the world where people may not be able to live vegan conveniently, and I appreciate that and am sensitive to it. But, you know, if we can get enough of the population to understand that it's wrong to hurt those who are vulnerable just to satisfy our pleasure, then we shift that paradigm of speciesism that keeps us locked in the ideology that we should be killing animals, and the world starts to change. It's simple supply and demand for the economists. You know, the less you ask for it, the less it's going to be there. You know, if beef and chicken and dairy manufacturers decided tomorrow that it made, you know, more profit to sell tomatoes, they'd be selling tomatoes, and we'd all be eating tomatoes instead. So, you know, the hierarchy of who's vulnerable in the global society, adult humans are probably the least vulnerable. They can say no, stop, help. They can make calls on their cell phones, dial 911, run away. Human children, more vulnerable, but still have some resources for help. Non-human individuals, the most vulnerable members of our global society, and we do the worst damage to them. And when we do that, we learn how to do it to humans. The concentration camps in Nazi Germany were based on the Chicago slaughterhouse methods of effective taking care of corpses. So, you know, what we do to the least vulnerable, we'll do to the most vulnerable eventually when we can figure it out. So why don't we just stop living violently and choose a nonviolent path, which is to choose to live vegan. It's the best decision I ever made in my life. It has brought me more benefits than I could even begin to talk about. So that's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
No, fantastic. And I want to thank you both for joining me and educating me. Perhaps next time we can take some time and kind of go through the environmental impacts of the meat industry, if you will. Because it, you know, we have so many people that say that the environment is so vital to them, and yet at the same time are willing to perpetuate something that obviously directly impacts the environment, myself included. I'm pointing at me here. So I want to give myself as much knowledge, and I want to give our viewers as much knowledge as we can, so that we can actually take some action in our lives and for our world.
Yeah.
So that's with great, that, Steve. I want to thank you both, and Trish in particular. I want to thank you so much for caring about me. Our distance friendship, it means an awful lot to me. So I really appreciate that. And you guys, and Keith, I'm so glad I got to meet you through this process as well. Mm. You're a really nice gentleman, and I appreciate your knowledge. It's just an amazing thing to meet people like you guys. So I thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. All right. Thank you, everybody.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us, and we will talk to you soon. Have a good night, everyone. Bye-bye.